Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody, it's Louis Mendez from Charlton Live here. We're very pleased to have teamed up with the Charlton Athletic Community Trust to host this bonus podcast on our feed. I'm going to hand you over now to Steve Sutherland to introduce his chat with Mr. Charlton himself, Keith Peacock.
Charlton Live.
Hi everyone, I'm Steve Sutherland. I'd like to welcome you to the first of a special three-part interview organised by the Charlton Athletic Community Trust. Now, I'm proud to be an ambassador of CACT, which is working extremely hard running the community hub on behalf of the Royal Borough of Greenwich to support vulnerable local residents. And CACT staff are actually out now delivering food parcels, collecting prescriptions, providing other invaluable support at this difficult time. Other CACT projects have been adapted, such as the Football and Sports Development Programme and the Extra Time Hub for older people, to ensure that CACT continues to support the community in the way that it always does. Now, some of the older Charlton supporters might remember that back in the late 80s and early 90s, I hosted a Sunday night radio show called Charlton Chat, where each week I interviewed a Charlton Athletic guest. Now, there was one person who I never got to interview at that time. I think he was otherwise engaged, and we thought we'd rectify that today. So let's now have a Charlton Chat with a man who is just synonymous with Charlton Athletic. It's my fellow CACT ambassador. It's Keith Peacock. Morning, Keith. Good afternoon, Keith. Good evening, Keith.
Hi there, Steve. Very good to hear you.
How are you?
It's great to be part of what CACT are doing over the years and particularly at this particular time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's quite admirable what CACT are doing. And we've got the Upbeat Walk as well. So, no, it's incredible. But this time we're going to talk about your career, Keith. So, It's been a long association with Charlton Athletic, Keith, hasn't it? I mean, it started when you were 15, I think, Keith, didn't it?
Yes, when I was 15, I was here at grammar school. And really, when I look back, had no chance of being a professional footballer because I was at a rugby school. I'd spent 8 months with an injury to my knee where I couldn't kick a ball at all. But I managed to get a trial for Charlton.
Just tell us a little bit about, because people won't really appreciate, the younger people might not really appreciate that there was no such thing as an academy structure or a like CACT run, a development programme, where development centres where young, talented young players are spotted. You had to be invited along for a trial in those days, Keith, didn't you?
Yes, well, there was no youth team football as such, you know, when you're 13, 14, and even 15, you had to play for a men's team.
Yeah.
And usually, if you were going to make it in football, for example, by the time you were 15 to 16, you would have either been playing for the county side or played for England schoolboys, and you'd get signed up by a professional club. Because I was at a rugby school in the main and we played a little bit of football, I was kind of quite a way behind, but I was a decent footballer. But my sports teachers really said you haven't any chance of becoming a professional. But that was my dream.
That was your spur, really.
Players have.
But thinking about it, Keith, you had that injury. You hadn't played for the whole of Kent or indeed England. Kids, youth team, had you? England schoolboys. So, your teacher saying that was quite understandable, really, wasn't it?
Quite understandable. He said, obviously, the best thing, which would have been my next choice, would be to go to Loughborough College, tip the A levels, go to Loughborough, and become a sports teacher. That would be my fallback aim. But yeah. I still had that feeling I wanted to give it everything to try and be a professional footballer.
And I remember from talking to you before, Keith, that your dad and a well-known Charlton name had a role to play in getting your trial match organised.
Yes, it's quite amazing, really. My father worked for Ford's for, in the end, about 20 years, just on the system there. He'd work all through the night, you know, 2 weeks through the night, 1 week during the day. Anyway, he an ex-Charlton player called Eric Lancelot, played, I think, during the 40s, 50s, worked in the same Ford's plant in Woolwich and Dagenham. And he was able to make contact with Charlton, and through his influence, I managed to get a trial just when I was 15.
Now, for to position this for Charlton fans, who were the management at the time? That would have been Trotter at that time.
Yes, Jimmy Trotter would be manager, and soon, and after another year or so, Frank Hill became
Frank
manager.
Frank Hill, and the trial match obviously went well, Keith, did it?
It went well. I was fantastic. I didn't score lots of goals or anything like that, but I did enough just to catch the eye, and then became part of the setup as a schoolboy. But unfortunately, I didn't play for the next 8 months because of a knee injury. So I was 16 and a half before I was 15 and a half when I started playing for the youth team.
But you see, for me, Keith, hearing that, so you have a trial match, then you have a bad injury, and in those days, injuries took longer to heal than they possibly do now. So you had a bad injury, you're, 15?
Yes.
Yet Charlton stuck by you. They must have seen something in you. This is incredible, really, isn't it?
Yes, I would go along sort of twice a month in those days on an evening and just do some exercises so that they knew I was about. And then after the Christmas, when I was about 15 and a half, then, they gave me chances to play in the youth team, and things took off from there. Probably the following season once I was 16. But and people get worried about their sons when they're playing football, and daughters as well these days, when they get an injury, they're going to miss all this time. You can, when you're young, you can make it up for that time. It really doesn't hinder you too much. I'm a great believer in that.
But you hear quite a lot of people at that time who I think a lot of it might be pub chat when they said, I could have been a player, but I got injured early. A lot of injuries in those days did finish people off, didn't they?
Yes, the serious ones of cruciate ligaments, you know, broken legs that don't heal properly. But sometimes you still had things like Osgood's Slatter and that going on that was probably undiagnosed then. And rest is often a good thing, and doing other sports. I was sort of all round and just did some general sort of stuff. And I think people can get too worried about having to play every week and having time off from things. When you're young, you can recover and you can rest, don't do any harm at all.
Well, clearly, because you joined the club, and so you're a young player, so it took another 2 years really before you got a chance of a first team game, wasn't it? It was 1962, I believe.
It was. The beginning of 62, I was starting to get into the reserve side, and I had a habit of scoring goals, and I was playing in the reserves. So coming up at the end of that 61-62 season, I was offered the chance to be professional, which was really quite an amazing acceleration from nowhere almost to becoming a chance to be offered the job.
And your dad must have been very proud of you at that time, Keith, from that initial trial and then going through the injury and then becoming a pro at Charlton. That must have been a special moment for the family as well.
It was, and particularly my father. My dad was a great influence on never giving up, carry on, keep working hard, and things will turn out for the best, or the best you can possibly get. So he really was a big influence. And he taught me really to be, if you have a chance of being a footballer, you don't want to go through life, because I was expected to go through the college route, the university, and the grammar school, the headmaster was quite disgusted, really, that I was actually going into football when I told him. He said, "You're just throwing away your whole education."
But of course, Keith, to sort of position this for people, you aren't going into a profession, let's be honest, like today, where the salaries are very high. Not for everybody, but they are very high, or can be if you achieve the highest. Salaries weren't so high in those days, were they?
No, the maximum wage, just before I actually signed in 1962, the maximum wage the year before had been £20 a week. That was capped.
Yeah.
But then through Jimmy Hill, it was raised, it was taken off, there was no cap, and Johnny Haynes was given £100 a week. Everyone was flabbergasted, saying, how could anyone spend £100 in 1 week?
Yeah.
Yes. obviously...
Incredible.
£100 was a lot more than in those days. But, so it wasn't what it is now.
Well, Jimmy Hill, you mentioned Jimmy Hill throughout this. I'm pretty sure we'll be mentioning quite a few famous old names, but just on Jimmy Hill, later when I got into football, Jimmy became quite an important part of my career because, apart from the fact he was a Cheltenham director at one point, wasn't he? Before my time, but the Football League, he was a director of the Football League when I worked there. So, but Jimmy was such a visionary, wasn't he? I mean, all-seater stadium and everything. So, the maximum wage was just the first of his innovations, really.
Yes, as PFA chairman, he was able to change the whole look of football in many ways. He was a visionary and did great for the team and for the players at that time.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the proud moment signing as a pro, but it must have been an even more proud moment when you got your debut. And I seem to recall from previous chats with you and everything that it was because a certain Cheltenham great had played cricket during this co-season as well. At that time, you had cricket footballers, didn't you? You got your chance, didn't you?
Yes, Stuart Leary, I used to watch him as a kid play. He was a magnificent player. Coming towards the end of his career, but he wanted to have a break a bit longer after the cricket season to have a few more weeks off. Tiger, who was the manager, said, no, you can't. You'll be there on time for pre-season. And he didn't turn up, which, strangely enough, gave me a chance when I look back. I'd only been training 5 weeks. We started the season, and suddenly I had a chance to get in the first team. I was taken to Sunderland. It was about the third game of the season. Went to Sunderland as... And my name was last on the list. So you had the 11 players, and it would just be put on the notice board. The last name was Peacock. So I thought, oh, that's very kind of them. They're taking me along just so, you know.
Yeah.
My family come from up there, doing me a favour. And as the 12th man, as it were, that doesn't play.
Well, this was before substitutes, of course.
No substitutes. I don't know who that was, but someone became a first substitute, and it was all
different.
Went up there, not expecting to play, pushing the big skip along with all the kit and boots in there.
Yeah.
Got to Roker Park Hotel, and then still not expecting to play. And I was told an hour and a half before the kickoff that I'm playing. Completely.
Now, what were you, 17?
I was 17 in a few months, yes.
17. So just being part of the away team at Roker Park, and for... fans who've never went there, the Roker Roar was a very famous part of football, wasn't it? Roker Park, one of those famous old stadiums that was full to the rafters in those days. And that must have been daunting, Keith.
Well, it was. I mean, obviously, it would have been unnatural if I wasn't nervous beforehand. I was perhaps a little bit shaken as I was doing my bootlaces up. And even I was still in awe of the very players I was playing with. You know, it's Sam Laurie. Mike Bailey playing in the team. Dennis Edwards was up front. And in the opposition, we actually was Brian Clough playing for Sunderland. But I wasn't even worrying about the opposition. I was just looking about the dressing room, being one of the first team players, nervous. But when I got on the field and when I heard that Roker Roar, it was just deafening. You couldn't hear yourself speak. But I suddenly lost any nerves, you know. I just
going to the moment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you mentioned a couple of them, but for Charlton fans, some of these players that you made your debut with are great Charlton names, legendary Charlton names. Well, let's run through a few. Well, in goal was an ex-Sunderland player, Peter Wakeham, who was one of my favourite goalkeepers ever for Charlton Athletic.
Yes. Peter Wakeham, that's a special day for him, of course. He was going back to Sunderland.
Yeah.
And he was a good goalkeeper, yes.
But you also had people like Brian Topnorm and Marvin Hinton, of course, in that team.
Yes, Tocky, good player, great friend as well at the time. Marvin was a class player, went on to play for Chelsea. He was an under-23 international, had a great career with Chelsea as well. Mike Bailey,
a
magnificent captain. John Hewitt played in that game. Brian Kinsey did.
Dennis Edwards, who sadly died recently, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Dennis played up front there.
Yeah.
And I played sort of just as an inside forward just behind him.
So in the Sunderland team, so because obviously this is an incredible debut you're making, and you're up to Roker Park, you're against Sunderland, and in goal was Jim Montgomery.
Yes.
Centre half would have been Charlie Hurley?
Yeah, the great Charlie Hurley. He was a total legend up there. And a fellow called Stan Anderson.
Yes.
I think Hurd played at centre forward, who went on to play for Arsenal, I think.
Hmm.
And, of course, Brian Clough.
Yeah. Superb player. People might know him as a very successful, very enigmatic manager, but what a great player he was as well before his career was cut short by injury.
Yes, it was only a few months after that game that he broke his leg and never played again, and he went to management, as you said, when he was quite young.
Yeah. Now, you lost that game, didn't you?
Yes, lost 1-0.
Yep, 1-0, yeah. What was your next? What was your actual? Let's move it forward now. So you've made your debut. What was your first game actually at the Valley, Keith, playing for the first team?
The first game was the following week, I think it was. We had Luton Town at home. I wasn't due to play, and Brian got to the ground at 2 o'clock. I was told Brian Kinsey, who was the left winger then. I'd never played on the left wing at all. I was told you're playing on the left wing, and that was it. That was an hour before the kickoff. We beat Luton 2-0, and I managed to score a header from Sam Laurie Cross.
Yeah.
The favouring goal was called Bainham, Ron Bainham. He had played 3 times for England, you know, good goalkeeper. But obviously, it was a day to remember, actually scoring on your home debut. And the family were there. To see me play for the first time, it was terrific.
Well, it must have been an incredible occasion, and you went on to establish yourself in the Charlton team, of course. And in the 60s, you were up against some iconic players and some emerging great teams, one being Leeds United, of course, and you had some famous games against the great Leeds players, didn't you, at that time?
Yes, indeed. In those early 60s, going up to Leeds, the first time I went up there, we lost 4-1. Norman Hunton would be playing, Jackie Charlton, a fellow called Collins, Billy Bremner, Johnny Giles was just getting ready to come in the side as well. He'd just come.
Billy Bremner more or less took Bobby Collins' place, didn't he?
He did. Yes, and so I think that was the following season, in the 63-64 season probably, that we played these games. And Bremner was the sort of player that, I mean, he's a great player, but he was actually told by Don Revy, I remember when I spoke to Bremner many years later, he was told that if he doesn't toughen up and look after himself, and sometimes have to kick someone before they kicked you, being a centre midfielder, then he wouldn't be finding himself in the team. And Bremner really started looking after himself.
Yeah. And how?
and how I was on the wrong side of a particularly nasty tackle that left me through the summer with a stud mark from my above my hip down one side of my whole leg. Yeah.
I bet he helped you up, though, afterwards.
No, it wasn't in the free kick. They wouldn't give free kicks for that. That was nothing. Back in the 60s. Every man for himself. No videos. Play on.
So the 60s, of course, was also a time when Charlton developed some great young players as well. Keep apart from yourself. I mean, it's also the time when people like Billy Bonds and Peter Reeves emerged, of course. And Billy went on to have an incredible career, didn't he, at West Ham? But to this day, we're renowned for developing young talent at Charlton, and you could see that right as early as the 60s, couldn't you?
Absolutely. And just before going on to those players that you've mentioned there, I would mention another player that I was playing against very soon. It was about the 8th, 9th game of the season. Played against Stanley Matthews. Now, this is like, today, it's like playing against Messi. He was footballer of the year, I think, in Europe, certainly in England. He was a magical player, but he was coming to the end of his career. He was 47. It was like playing against my granddad, really. I'm 17, he's 47. I'm thinking, surely, I must be quicker than him. But he was magical. They beat us. We played on alternate Tuesdays. They beat us 6-3 up there, and he played spasms, but he was unstoppable. Then he played at the Valley and instigated a 3-0 win, much to our demise on that day. And that was Lenny Glover's first game for the club.
Lenny Glover's debut. I remember my dad said that I went to that game. He took me to that game. Well, of course, I don't really remember that, because I think I'd have been about 6 or 7. But at least I can say, according to my dad, bless him, at least I can say I saw Stanley Matthews play at the Valley. But that was Len Glover's debut, of course, as you just said. Who went on to have a great career. I mean, 47. Players are fit now, Keith. Players are arguably fitter than they've ever been now. But you can't see an outfield player playing until 47, can you?
No, you couldn't see that. But he was phenomenal because, I was totally in awe of him. I'd only seen him on the TV. To see him walk before the first game, walking in the hotel, my jaw must have dropped and hit the ground just seeing him there. But he was just different. He was already, he would fast on a Monday. They were recovery day, but when I spoke to him, he'd fast on the Monday, only drink liquid, you know, there's like a detox, I suppose. He was in the leanest of conditions. He was naturally very, very quick and had a body swerve that sent people falling out of the stadium. He just was so fit and so fit looking. I didn't meet him again until I was in America, in Toronto, and had the pleasure of talking to him out in Toronto where he was doing some football coaching stuff. And he hardly looked a day older. He was in a magnificent specimen, way ahead of his time.
Well, he certainly was, and I had the pleasure of meeting him as well. For the young boy from Plumstead, I had the pleasure of meeting him when I represented the Football League at Stoke City, and it was a sponsorship. I think it was a Yokohama Tyres award, I think. And sadly, Matthews presented it to Stoke City captain at the time. And it was an incredible to me. And as you say, the man had an aura about him then, so to play against him must have just been incredible. The 60s were an interesting era for Chom, because we had good sides, Keith, didn't we? And we got close a couple of times as well, didn't we, to promotion?
Yes. Soon after that first season where we we were talking about the 62-63, just escaped relegation, last game of the season. The next season, who came to us was Eddie Firmani. And
yeah,
there was the player, the best striker
has
ever had. He was coming towards the end of his career, unfortunately, but he's gone to a... It started with Charlton, went out to Sampdoria, then Genoa, and then came back many years later. But he was just a pleasure to play with. And with him coming back in 63-64, we came third top. I was mainly on the sidelines, and I played 11 games that season because, quite rightly, he certainly took my place, and he then helped us almost get promotion, just fell short. Then came the middle years where we had, as you say, good players coming through, young players. Billy Bonds came through, and he was such a quiet fella, and that we had a manager, Tiger Hill, who just roared at you and yelled and was most, not what you'd think of as a modern-day manager. This was Tiger, aptly named Tiger. He behaved like one at times, you know.
Well, they used to be military men, didn't they? Yeah. You know, they used to be called Sergeant Major types, didn't they, in those days, managers?
Yes.
A lot of them.
There's certainly quite a few, and he was one that you just didn't argue with. And Billy Bonds would fade into the background a bit. He didn't really want to be in five-a-sides when Tiger was there, but then he got in the side, and in two years he may have been with us, he was one so exciting and one of the most athletic, determined, all-round players, as a defender in the league. As possible. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Should have said under Eddie Firmani, when he came back, but he had an incredible career in Italy, of course, didn't he? And he went, even though he was South African, wasn't he?
Yes.
He went on to have a great career in Italy and represented Italy as well. And then he came back to us. And I remember that period because there was a game that stuck in my mind from then, and Billy Bonds probably played in it, you'll tell me. But it was a game at the Valley, Keith, that I remember, against Cardiff. And I remember the newspapers billing this as Eddie Firmani versus John Charles. And there were pictures. Fans might have these pictures of the packed Valley with people hanging from those old floodlights. And we went on to win that game. Did you play in that game, Keith?
No, I didn't. I was learning my trade now, although I've been in the first in 30 appearances at 17. At 18, I'm now really having to go back. Firmani comes in. He came in after about 10 games of that season. This is just before Billy Bonds, actually. You know, you mentioned him. And he made all the difference. He doubled the crowd. Can you imagine? We had like average 12,000, and the crowd doubled just for the fact that he was coming back playing. 20,000.
Yeah.
He was special and almost got this promotion.
Well, let's carry on talking about a little bit further then, because we're in 1965. Something that... You're reminded of quite a lot, Keith, but you became the first substitute in football, didn't you?
I did. I played nearly all of the games in pre-season. We're playing Bolton away, always a tough game. Travel up there, get to the ground. I'm fully expecting to play. Bob Stoker was the manager.
Yeah.
He pulled me aside and said that he's going to have me as sub. Well, sub just meant you're going to sit there on the side in full kit, shin pads and everything, and you're not going to get on because you only got on...
If there was an injury, really, wasn't it?
With an injury, and it had to be... In those days, players would battle on with, cut heads and groin strains and all that. They would not come off the field. So it had to be a serious injury. After 11 minutes, I was probably still not sulking, but almost. I was disappointed. And the goalkeeper, Mike Rose, was injured after 11 minutes, and I was on the field. Fortunately, he didn't have to play in goal.
I was going to say.
I think that was John Dewey on that day. I think would have...
Probably.
Yeah, John Dewey or Ken's. I'll have to think back on that one now.
But you went into the history books, though, Keith, didn't you? You know, you were the first ever Football League substitute.
I know.
Well, it gave you a title for your book as well, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It gave me an actual title because I wasn't substitute too many times. But I was the first, and we didn't think anything of it. Coming back on the train from Manchester, it got the Manchester Pink, and it had a little one-liner in there, a bit of a mention in some of the papers, but nothing too much. A lot of people were against it. They were saying, what's happening to English football? Having to have people come on. What are we, men or mice, going out there? It really was. I look back on some of those, I think more people were against it than were for it.
Right.
But, of course, it soon changed.
Yeah. You mentioned the football, you mentioned on the Pink. A lot of people might think, what was that? But in those days, a lot of regional papers had Pink newspapers, which were effectively the results roundups and the football news, weren't they?
Yes, the great thing about these papers, they would be out. So we left Bolton. By the time we got to Manchester, you know, 20 minutes later, whatever, got on the train, the Pink paper was out there. As back in London, Evening Standard, Evening News would come out. They'd have all the full-time results, and they'd have reports on the game up until half-time, which is quite incredible.
Really, yeah. It was the internet of its time, really, wasn't it, I suppose? Okay, well, let's because obviously we're going to be moving into the 70s soon, but let's just talk a little bit more about finding, you know, some of the great players who played for Charlton with you in those days. And we've got to talk about people who had a huge impact. People like Charlie Wright, legendary goalkeeper in goal, who made that position his own, Keith, didn't he?
He did. I think Charlie was one of the best, looking back, one of the best goalkeepers we had. You know, I believe Dean Kiely was right up there, and obviously Nicky Johns and Bob Boulder.
Yeah.
But Charlie was very good. He was an entertainer as well.
He was, yeah.
And with him coming in that middle part of the 60s, we brought in through Bob Stokoe more than we'd be bringing in players that were older players, tried and tested. One such player was pretty must have mentioned would be Cliff Holton.
Oh, Cliff Holton was incredibly. I mean, he had an impact straight away, Keith, didn't he, at Charlton? I remember as a young boy watching.
He was about 6'1", 2". He was really getting old. He must have been about 35. And that seems so old to me as being a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old. But he would often be picked up on like a free transfer to go to a club and give them a lift.
Yeah.
We were bottom this season about 66-ish, round about then. Bob Stoker was the manager and he got in Cliff Holton. We were bottom of the league. We were playing Ipswich away, Cliff's debut. We're on the coach and he just picked up the microphone as we're going to the ground. He's saying, "Don't worry, lads. You're going to win the first game away from home this season. I have always been on the winning side on my debut and I always score. So really relax, have a good time. It'll work out well." Lenny Glover and I were playing and we were going, "Oh, he's so confident there." And he took over. I mean, hadn't done that before. Anyone just taking the mic.
I can imagine. If you did that today, people would go, "Sit down."
Sit down, yeah. Well, some of the older players, yeah, perhaps Ron Saunders was playing there and sort of looked at him as if to say, "Well, you're coming up with a bit of, propaganda there." Anyway, we got there. We won 4-1. Holton scored. I scored direct from a corner, so it's a complete fluke. But we're believing. He's right. He said we're going to beat them 4-1. They were about third top in the league, and we were bottom and won, and it was halfway through the season and won away from home. So he made a tremendous impact on the team.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And you mentioned another player just in passing there, but Ron Saunders, of course.
Ron Saunders, yes. Bob Sugger was going for these older players that were good and sound players. And Ron came in, and I particularly liked him. He took me under his wing. He was built like so strongly, like the players are now, but kind of thicker set. You know, stomachs were like iron. They called him Popeye at Portsmouth because he had such big bulging biceps.
Yeah.
But he taught me a lot, and I knew he would go on to be a great manager.
He certainly did that, of course.
And a good centre forward.
Yeah. But we can't move on from the 60s without talking about that great team in 68-69 under Eddie Firmani, which just narrowly lost out on promotion, didn't it?
It did, yes. Eddie came in 68, took over from 67, I think, actually. Took over from Bob Soker. His first game against Aston Villa, we won 3-1. Harry Gregory would be playing, Paul Wendt, myself. And we finished that season quite well. Then the next season, we were ready to go, and we had Matt Tees up front with Ray Tracy.
Oh, I mean, that was a double act that I really, really enjoyed watching keep as a supporter.
Yes.
They had everything. You know, Matt Tees was imperious in the air, of course, wasn't he?
He was. He was as lean as a bean. Training, he was so far behind the rest of us, just in the warm-up. He would only really wanted to play in goal in five-a-side. It seems strange now. Mm. A leisurely five-a-side at the end. He'd always want to play in goal, so he didn't have to waste too much energy. But on the Saturday, he would be like a chase, and he fought, and he was one of the best headers that in football that I've seen. He could rise so well.
Yeah, a great player, but that team, as I say, we narrowly lost out. I think we came third that year, didn't we? I think it was Palace and Derby County, I think. But we narrowly lost out. But, I mean, you mentioned Tees and Treacy, but apart from Charlie Wright, who I mentioned, but Bob Curtis had replaced effectively Billy Bonds, hadn't he? Brian Kinsey, Paul Wendt and Peter Reeves. I mean, Peter would have had a much longer career if it hadn't been curtailed by injury, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, that team sort of almost spoke for itself, like Charlie Wright, Bob Curtis at right back, Wenty, he got an injury. He was taken over by Kears for a while, but Wenty was fantastic, centre-half, so powerful, biggest guys I'd seen in football at that stage. Peter Rees would mark out the danger men from the other side. Kinsey was the all-round player, playing steadily at left-back. We had Harry Gregory, right side of midfield, with a great combination in midfield of Graham Moore and Campbell being the the clever instigator of
Alan Campbell was a very clever player, and alongside Graham Moore, that was a very strong midfield pairing, wasn't it?
Very strong indeed. And I loved playing with him. I was on the left wing then, and with Tees and Gray Tracy up front, two fantastic headers of the ball. I could put rubbish crosses in there for them. They'd still hit the ball at goal. Graham Moore and Campbell, Alan Campbell, were very, they blended with one another. Big Graham had no pace but could spray the ball 50 yards out wide and would physically be strong to stand up to people. And Alan Campbell had that bit of shrewdness about his play. He could have done a lot better. Probably looking back at those careers, which was perhaps, you know, people would like a drink, players would like a drink in midweek a bit, sometimes a little bit too heavily. and looking back, perhaps a player like Alan Campbell could have done even better than he did.
I think he was one of my favourite Charlton players, certainly. But I just want to mention a little bit about Peter Reeves, because I know he used to have famous battles where he'd mark Rodney Marsh, wouldn't he?
He did, and Rodney Marsh eventually got transferred from QPR after many years being the star man and the one to watch in Division 2, the Championship now. And he went to Man City, and I remember coming back on the train. We had been playing Blackburn or someone, and Rodney was on the same train, and he said, I said, oh, how are things going? He went, well, yeah, Fanny Lee's working with, and Summerbee, and all, Colin Bell, with great players. He said, it's so much easier. He said, I was just so glad to get out of Division 2 and get away from Peter Reeves. Said, I'd ever give me a kid, he'd man mark me. And that sort of player was about in those mid-60s. You'd mark the danger man out of the game. If you could stop someone like Marsh or Stan Bowles and that later,
yeah,
they'd done a great job and influenced the game so much.
No, they certainly did. And
he was the best tackler. I've got to say this. The best and fairest tackler, which is hard to do when you think of Norman Hunters, who I played against, Chopper Harris, the so-called hard man. He was a tackler that would win the ball fairly. He was only booked about four times, I believe, in his whole career.
Which is quite amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. He was just such a clean, strong tackler and, you know, good. Someone you always wanted on your side. Would have gone to play over 500 games had he not been injured.
Keith, we're gonna move forward now into the next era, the 70s, and of course this is the era where we see the emergence of the great Powell, Howes, Flanagan, Peacock, and quartet. But Eddie Firmani sadly was sacked, which is a sad ending for some, you know, a great Charlton legend as he was. And Theo, who was coach, I think, was promoted as manager. And that was, what, 70, 71 season?
Yes, the 70, 71 season, I think that was. I remember the date quite clearly because we lost. We played Leicester City at home. And we lost 5-1, which was not a good result at home.
No.
As you can imagine. So it comes to the end of the 1970, I think it was. Lost 5-1 at home. Unbeknownst to when we left the ground, I just moved into a house in Oakhampton Crescent in Welling. And in those days, you'd have be expected to have, if you moved into a new home, you'd be expected to have a housewarming party. It was just, you know, if you didn't, everyone would look at you and think, well, what's going on? Having said that, we had parties quite often in those days.
I can imagine, Keith. Yeah.
We used to celebrate, if we lost, we celebrated. If we lost, we obviously drowned our sorrows. If we won, we celebrated. And the only time we didn't have a party was when we drew. Anyway, this party was for the housewarming. And I'm thinking, I've come back 500 feet. We've got Leslie's got everything laid out. We spent a lot of money on drinks and food. My grandmother was there and my mum and dad. And they were the only ones. And it's now 10:15. No, and I'm going, no one's going to turn up here. It was just after 10:15, suddenly all the players came in with wives, girlfriends, etc. And that night was the start. What happened was the next day, it was sacked, you know.
Yeah.
And Theo Foley took over.
Well, let's talk about Theo. He joined as a player, but he was coming to the end of his career, of course, then. I think injury got the better of him, but he was a very good coach and he took over from Eddie. And, of course, he was responsible for bringing in people like Arthur Horsfield, for instance, Colin Powell, Mike Flanagan. Yeah. An incredible recruitment campaign that he went on.
Number one with Theo, as a coach, for me, he was the most influential man in terms of on the professional side. He helped me so much, encouraged me. And then when he became manager, you know, he had a different role to play.
Yeah.
As a coach, he was superb. And what he did have, the other great talent, he had a great eye for a player. It was helped with Les Gore, was the chief scout back in those days. And so
yes.
He confer with him. But he got some players in, like you've mentioned, Arthur Horsfield, who did a magnificent job, scored something like, 50, 60 goals for us in a two or three seasons.
Yes, but he also played a lot of those games at centre-half as well.
He did at the end. He'd score from set plays then. He was terrific. A great target man, a superb header of the ball, and so powerful. You know, when the ball was knocked into him, he could hold it up.
Yeah.
There was him. Colin Powell, as you say, Paddy, when he came, he was not like the usual wingers who would maybe, what I called, dance at their fullback. You know, like, say, the Matthews and the Tom Finneys, they would slow the game, swerve and push it past. Paddy had this very elegant, long striding style.
Extremely elegant style, didn't he?
And he seemed to be at ease. And whereas, say, a lot of players, maybe the wingers would be slow the game down and be sharp after over about 15 yards and cross the ball, he would go on at about three-quarter pace and then get in his stride and go even faster. Like you would imagine a 200-metre runner going.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, the pitch was too small for him, I think, looking back. but he was elegant in his style, and he had a great drop. He was able to cross the ball superbly, dropping the ball between centre-back and full-back. He just timed it superbly, and you knew it was coming in. Exceptional player.
And of course, Derek Hales.
Derek Hales was different.
Yes.
He turned up and he had long black hair down to his shoulders. He had a moustache down to his shoulders, a beard past his shoulders. And
knowing him, last night's dinner in his beard as well.
of course, he's gone for the change of colour now. You know, white.
Yes, he's gone for the Uncle Albert look at the moment, I think.
The best goal scorer at the club was
without a shadow of a doubt.
So he goes past Eddie Firmani in terms of actual goal scoring.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But he was, and first seeing him, he had come from Luton, hadn't he, for about 6 hours or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have the normal banter, and I said something to him early doors, just a bit of banter on the trainer field, and he just slowly looked at me. And I thought, I may not say that again. But he never did anything. He just had that look. And, of course, he looked so aggressive in his movement because he was quick, sharp, and he didn't mind a bit of physical contact.
No, he didn't. I think he quite enjoyed it.
He enjoyed giving it out, that's for sure. If anyone hits him, he would make sure they got it threefold back. But that was happening more back in those days.
Keith, when I played Sunday football, everyone, especially as a younger player, all those teams in those days had someone who protected you. Someone who would get the retribution back if you'd been harshly dealt with by a player.
Yeah.
Was Halsey that type of player?
He would be in a way, but we had a couple of big fellas in the side that were, so Paddy got kicked a couple of times and threatened by the fullback. particularly remember one game we were playing abroad in a pre-season friendly, and he's been shoved around, Paddy, by this fullback, looked as though it could get a bit nasty. Arthur Horsfield, Jimmy Giles were over there in a flash and threatened their fullback. If they touched his lovely blonde hair, they wouldn't look so good after the game. So you did, as you quite rightly say, I hadn't thought about that, but you did have to remind us.
Yes, yeah, each team had them. And so other players came in. Let's talk, because they were so... The 70s, we played some stunning football and we just didn't reach the heights we should have done, I think. But, players like Jimmy Giles, again a Theo in port, wasn't he?
Yes, Theo got him, from down from Exeter, area that Theo knew well. And Jimmy did a good job for us and a great character. And before mentioning another player, but just on Jimmy, he had a face but had been smashed about in football a bit,
Yeah.
So we used to unkindly say that, look, we need someone at the near post to do the flick on where the goalkeeper comes out, trying to punch, usually he punches the opposition person in that position at the near post. And he played bravely in there and made many a goal.
Yeah,
made many goals. And for the likes of Mike Flanagan, who came,
absolutely. No, I mentioned Mike came from Spurs, didn't he? And
yes.
Came as a young winger, I think.
He did. Now, I was, I needed to start playing in midfield, but I was still playing on the wing. He came along. And I did say to Theo, he will be best down the middle. Now, that wasn't because I was...
You wanted him out of the way.
I wanted him out of the way. I could see the way he held the ball up. He didn't have a natural swerve of the body to send a fullback the wrong way. So I didn't think he had that guile. Put him up front, and which he eventually did. And, of course, he was one of the best all-round strikers that we've had over the years.
Oh, superb player. And, of course, Theo, let's move that on now, because we did win promotion during the 70s, and that was in the 74-75 season. But Theo had left now. Theo had lost out, and a guy called Andy Nelson took over from him, didn't he?
Yes, formerly got promotion with Gillingham. The year before.
He was an ex-Ipswich centre-half, wasn't he, Andy?
Yes, he worked under Alf Ramsey and was very knowledgeable. Completely different character to Theo. Theo could spot a player, as I said, and was in with the players and great on the training field. Andy Nelson ruled with the iron rod, really. What he said goes, we are doing this, we are playing this way, that is it. If you don't do it, you're out.
How did strong characters, and you mentioned a couple earlier, and of course Halsey, how did strong characters react to that type of management, Keith?
Well, as you bring up Halsey, it was perfect for Halsey because what he wanted, but he insisted, no high balls into the box. Right? We played balls down the side and we whipped the ball in low crosses for our strikers, being Halsey in particular. Flanagan could do, you know, he was quick, he was no giant in there. And we were able to score a lot of goals through having this ability to cross early and low balls, and everyone was expecting that. And if you shot, if you had a shot from outside the box, you would be criticised and you could lose your place.
Really? Yeah.
You had to get towards that byline, hit balls across. And he was playing the percentage game. When I look back, it was like a bookkeeper saying, look, the odds of scoring from so far out, unless you're like Peter Lorimer or a Mike Kenny, you play the percentage one, and we got into that habit. He had a clever way of thinking that was not in the coaching book. Never, ever lift the... when you're playing away from home, never do something silly like give a corner away or get caught in possession in, you know, especially the first half an hour, to lift the crowd, the away crowd. You know, the crowd we're playing away.
Yes, yes.
Simple little things they were. But he would not have... If you made that mistake and you went against what he had said, then you'd come out the side.
And there were players... He built a squad there, didn't he? Because he'd added to the players that Theo had brought in with people like, of course, Dave Young came down, didn't he?
Yes, Dave Young came down. He was there for probably about a season and a half, Dave.
Yeah.
Two seasons, maybe. But he had played a steady, good, solid performances he gave, yes.
And at that time, of course, players like Rich Cheek, Richie Bowman, Peter Hunt, Phil Warman, they came to the fore as well.
Great. Yes. But they were all players that had been nurtured by Theo.
Yeah.
Then you add on Flanagan and Hales and Jimmy Charles and different players like that. He had brought, and Cyril Davies, you know, these were a nucleus of players. So the team was there, and they just... had a kind of more, I suppose you could say, disciplined, but a one way of playing, which kind of dulled your instincts as a player that liked to be doing something different and play more intricate football, more ball-playing football. This was more direct. But it worked. It got us out of that division.
And of course, at that time, other players like Richie Bowman, Peter Hunt, Phil Warman, Cyril Davies, we never mentioned Cyril Davies, came to the fore.
No, he was almost a slightly lesser player to Alan Campbell, but on those lines, you know.
Had the look of Alan Campbell as well, didn't he?
He had a similar hairstyle, but he unfortunately had a bad injury at Birmingham and did his knee ligaments, and that curtailed his career with Charlton. But all those players that you've mentioned there, to add to that, to the Flanagans, Powells and Halsey, the players that Theo got into the club, and it was just then changing the way we played.
Yes.
Actually got us promotion. It wasn't... Most of the players, like Phil Warman, wouldn't be happy. I know he and I would like to try and play more exciting football in a way. But no, you had to do certain things. And we did it, and we got promotion. So it proved the right thing in terms of that. You know, getting promotion was the thing. We had to get back into the Division 2.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the next season, we had quite a decent position in the league, as I recall. But we lost Derek Howells, of course, and that changed the way the team had to play. But I mean, Derek left for over 300,000 to Derby County.
Yes, and obviously a big miss. We started well, I think the first season or so, when we got promotion. And Halsey, for a couple of seasons there, was knocking the goals in at will. And he got better and better, more confident. We knew how to play to his strengths. He could hit balls in at any time, any way the ball bounced, it would end up on target. So he was tremendous. And of course, Flanagan was an exceptional player as well. So they had a nice blend going there.
I remember as a fan being absolutely distraught when Derek left, but as I think most Charlton fans were. But then we saw another aspect of Mike Flanagan, because he took the lone striker role, really, which was probably one of the first times a lone striker, one up front, was being played, I would think.
Yes, certainly in the Championship and even the top league, you know.
Yeah.
Most were still playing with the two up front. One played maybe a little bit deeper. But when we lost Halsey, Flano played up front and we had the Paddy on one side and Hugh McCauley came in. I dropped one to midfield. Yeah. And we got a lot of good results and we were doing well. We were difficult to beat. Phil Warman was an outstanding player that year. Peter Hunt was always good. And Flano kept on scoring goals. So we were difficult to play against, but in a nice way. We were kind of, when we got the ball, we had people that could run with the ball, and we were outstanding at the set plays as well. We got so many goals.
Yes, I remember we were deadly at set plays. I do remember those days. And a guy called Dick Tolman came, of course, joined us, an elegant midfield player.
Yes, Dick came in from Gillingham, and he could spray. His big strength was his passing ability. He didn't get many goals. For someone who was about 6'2", we used to use him as a decoy at set plays, put him on the near post, and someone would think, well, he's so tall, he's got to be marked. But he would never hit the ball, but he could spray the ball from like 40, 50 yards, which would open up the game, and a real good man that was respected by all. In fact, he was my first signing when I was I took over at Gillingham later on.
I remember that, yes, of course, yeah. The situation then was, of course, that Derek Hales came back.
He did.
And it wasn't all harmony and light, Keith, was it?
No, you've got to think about the circumstances. Halsey and Flanagan were doing great together. Halsey goes, 330,000, had to go for that sort of money for Charlton.
Yes.
To take it. Then Flano becomes the top man, the top striker. He's doing well. He goes out to America with Paddy Powell, actually, and he becomes a big star out there. He was a top goal scorer for New England.
New England team, then, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, they wanted him badly to come back and become their player. So in that period now, he's out in New England. Halsey gets re-signed at the club. So Flanagan now, when he comes back, he's been used to being the number one out in America.
Yeah.
And the whole of the NASL, he was probably the number one man at that time, apart from someone like Pelé.
I think he won the title Most Valuable Player.
I think he did, yeah. And of course, he'd scored a lot of goals for Charlton as well. So he was in he wasn't the youngster, playing second fiddle to Fat Hell, as you say.
No.
So it was, but we were good, they were doing well together. Then Harris got an injury and came back. Then, of course, that infamous day when we decided that we'd play with nine men.
Yes, against Maidstone United in the FA Cup, and I remember it well. Yeah. I was, in fact, I was working for Midland Bank in those days, and the goalkeeper of Maidstone. I cashed his cheque the next day. He came in to my branch in Grove Park the next day. Yeah. And Dickie Guy.
Dickie Guy, yes.
And, you know, I asked him about it, you know, much to the annoyance of the huge queue behind him in the banking hall. But, it was surreal watching it from the touchline. It was surreal from the terraces.
Yeah. No, a most unusual situation. I had come back on the bench because I was captain of the side at that during those years. But I think the manager was thinking, oh, well, I'll rescue anyway. We should get through this game all right. I came on in the second half. As I said, we were losing 1-0. Flanagan, I think, pulled the goal back, made it 1-1. And he was the only one that looked half decent that night. Flanagan, instead of passing, the correct ball would have been to pass to Hales, he put him through, but he decided to go alone and have a shot. Words were exchanged, and Flan went towards Halsey, and Halsey would always react first before, you know, any chance of being hit. So off it went, and both players were sent off.
Yeah. Quite surreal, really, watching it.
Yes. Now we're struggling with 11 men. Now we're down to 9. Lost our 2 main strikers for the next few weeks, which was obviously hurt us, although we won the replay.
Won the replay, yeah. You mentioned earlier, Keith, because it did have an impact, and a negative one in a lot of ways in terms of our league position, but... you mentioned that supposed tie-up with New England team men, and we lost Colin Powell. They went off to the States, and probably went a little bit too early for us, didn't they? Weakened us.
That's so true. I mean, it was very disheartening for us all, and particularly myself. I've been promised that I could have this kind of like a bonus period to go out to the States. For my longevity for the club. But what happened was New England came in with a bunch of money to enable, provided we would get, they could get Flanagan and Colin Powell.
Yeah.
And we had about, I don't know how many games to go, maybe 6 or 8. And Andy Nelson let them go. And he was in charge of that sort of situation.
Yeah.
Probably thought we'd be safe enough to stay up. But we lost our two of our most effective players. We had no recognised striker. And we struggled then those last few games and had to actually... I ended up playing at that time in my career, I was about 32-3, playing up front in those days, which was back when I was 17 to 21. It was very, very difficult, and we had to go to Leighton Orient last game of the season. We had to get a draw to stay up, and that was one of the most nerve-wracking games I played in to hold on to our status.
I mean, that was such a self-inflicted damage to us that season, wasn't it? It was ridiculous in a lot of ways.
It was surprising, but money talked, and probably. They're thinking, well, there's a big chunk of money for us. We don't have to pay them through the summer. You know, that's going to help our finances. And we should have enough to stay up. But in football, you've only got enough to stay up. The one time we were relegated at Charlton was in 72. And that was my testimonial year. And we lost. We only won, got 2 points from the last 10 games, drew 2. So that sort of thing can happen. But fortunately, we got away with it.
No, you did. It must have been. But you mentioned that there was a promise that you could go to America, and it's something I know that you wanted to do. And this was the emerging time when a lot of fantastic ex-players, former players, well, not former, current, coming to the end of their careers, were going off to play in America. You weren't allowed to go, but you wanted the experience. And ultimately, you you did leave in 79, I think, to go to America first, didn't you, Keith?
That's right. I went there. I had a year of my contract to go. We decided to cancel the contract. That season, we just stayed up last game of the season again many times. I had many of those.
Yeah.
Stayed up, and the next day I was flying off to Columbus and Ohio, and a whole new chapter was starting in my career. And I was obviously, the fans, I couldn't let it out publicly. Andy Nelson had insisted if we did a contractual deal to finish my stay with Charlton, that we did, nothing was mentioned in the press. That final day, it was I didn't plan it myself. I just had a wave to the crowd, but this would be money for the last time I was there as a Charlton player.
Yeah, it must have been quite emotional for you, Keith.
It was. Nearly 600 games, great memories. And the thing is that I was brought up with, really, was that to play football for a living, you know, that was, my father would say, this is just a privilege for you. Mm. And remember, you're so lucky, because everyone needs a bit of luck. Maybe it was him mentioned it to Eric Lancelot, the bit of luck came in there. And you never really have to work if you're playing football, because you do that for fun. Some people pay money to actually play the game of football.
Yes.
And there I was. I'd had 17 years at the same club. Had a testimonial. What more could I say? I was delighted to be part of a fantastic club. Didn't win many things, but exciting.
You and your colleagues at the time in the 60s and the 70s, you gave us supporters some tremendous experiences, some tremendous memories, some great performances. You played with great players, and you scored quite a few goals, Keith, as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
And surprisingly, quite a few with your head as well.
Yeah, my first one was with my head. You know, not the biggest, but there were a few players like Keegan, never very big, but he could head the ball. I wasn't as good as him. But, used to practice quite a bit on that, particularly when I played off the striker up front in those early days. And my record was just under one in the first 88 games. It was just under 1 in 3 that I'd score. They were mainly in times where we were towards the bottom of the league.
Yes.
So that was my true position to be, probably front of a diamond. I'd like to be playing the front of the diamond for Bowyer, but I'll have to leave that till I'm a little bit more mature.
So your career started in 60 at Charlton, finished in 79. But before we leave it for this particular period, Keith, you had a phone call in America. You actually could have come back in 1979, couldn't you?
I did. I had a phone call 6 months after we had arrived there. I'd signed a 2-year contract with Tampa Bay Rowdies then, and I had a phone call from Michael Kitson,
the chairman.
The chairman at the time, yes, said they'd been relegated the season I left. So they were in the division below again. Interesting phone call. Perhaps we can talk about that.
I think that's one for the next time, Keith.
For the next decade.
As we talk about the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, of course, for next time. But thanks ever so much, Keith. And everyone, if you've enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you have, please consider making a donation to CACT at www.cact.org.uk/donate. And any money raised will help keep CACT going and working for the community at this extremely difficult time. And CACT officers are doing a marvellous job. So, Keith, thank you very much indeed. We'll talk again when we talk about the 80s. And the 90s.
Thank you, Steve. And yes, exactly what Sue said about supporting CAP. Fantastic what they're doing. And if you can't get behind them, please do.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.